Thank you again, everyone, for being here this morning. Corinne, thank you for leading the service today, and thank you for your music and just all of you being here. And I know you're here only because it's an annual meeting, so I know that. But you showed up early, and I appreciate that. And yes, today is the second Sunday of Advent in the Christian tradition. Some of our congregations call it a season of renewal to go broader than our Christian heritage. The first candle, as you heard, was faith last Sunday. And today we turn to the second candle of hope. And as the reading said, hope is a state of mind. Hope is an ability to work for something because it is good. And I would add, it might have a positive outcome, but we do not know. And that's what hope can be. So what I'm going to do is mention several types of hope, and then a type of hope that might actually be relevant to the annual meeting, to the work we do together as a congregation. Someone asked me this morning, or this week, when in my life I felt most hopeless, and how did I survive it? And I ran through a list, actually it's quite a long list, and the one that I came up with was actually pretty simple. The most helpless day that I can remember was my first day of sobriety from alcohol on June 14th, 2003, in Springfield, Illinois, where I was ending a successful 2-year interim ministry. I remember that day well. I recall waking up from yet another night of blackout. I had vomited several times during the night. I thought about simply giving up and drinking myself to death. It wouldn't have taken that much longer, I don't think. I felt hopeless and defeated and alone, and the future was simply unimaginable. But then what I did was I picked up the phone and I called my friends in the AA group that I attended in Springfield. They came over, they helped me clean up, and they took me to a meeting that I usually attended. I felt terrible and ashamed. They assured me that they would share their experience, strength, and hope with me, no matter what. They reminded me, get through the first 24 hours. Call anyone I needed to call. Come to meetings. They would come by and get me. And I realized on that first day and the second day and beyond that hope was not a one person in isolation task. Other people at that time had to give me daily doses of hope. And no matter how uncertain my future looked at that time, what they helped me to do was stop looking down shamefully at my feet, but instead lift my head back up and look at the path ahead of me of my future, and take it, as we say in AA, one step at a time. Now, as we know, hope is a very ancient concept in our world. Many of us probably remember the ancient Greek myth about hope. The Greeks called the spirit or essence of hope elpis, who is contained in a jar, sometimes called a cabinet, but the stories aren't clear on that. It was put into a jar, and Zeus, the main god, gave it to Pandora, who was the first woman. Pandora opened the box, despite any warnings, and all the diseases and evils that could trouble humankind came out and flew away. The only one that stayed was Elpis, or hope. Now, let me do a little aside here. You will note that similarity to the Genesis story where women are the ones who always cause despair and evil to arise in the world. And no matter whether you believe those stories or not, in my opinion, humbly, that is not true. Many Western religious traditions see hope as an ever-present gift to humankind, despite of or because of our imperfections. Jewish texts see hope as the way to close the gap between our present, not good condition, but a more desirable condition in the future. And the history of the Jewish people is tied up very deeply with hope because of exile, genocide, and torment. And the commentators say that the Jewish people are determined to keep hope alive because of the covenant they have with Yahweh as the chosen people. Christian theology sees the three great virtues, faith, hope, and love, as the three ways to evoke the promise of God's will for us. Islamic traditions and writers say that all hope that we carry is a resource from Allah and not from ourselves, because we are weak and willful people. So we have to be given hope from the divine, from Allah, all the time. Because if we put our faith and trust in Allah, then Allah's hopes for us will be fulfilled. Well, what about hope as a non-religious concept? There's a book by Julie Neros called Apprenticed to Hope, a source book for difficult times. And she talks about seven types of hope. And I'm only going to mention five. If you want to know about the other two, talk to me afterwards, but not during the annual meeting. The first type of hope she talks about is bargainer's hope. And this is the type of hope we often express during traumatic times. The late Elizabeth Kubler-Ross suggested five stages of grief, and in our times when hope collides with reality. She said that the stages included denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then finally, at some point, acceptance in our circumstances. Those of us in recovery from addictions will probably remember that fruitless bargaining. If I take one drink today, I am going to promise to stop tomorrow. If I have this one piece of triple chocolate cake, I promise never to eat cake again, ever. And in some very serious circumstances, which I have encountered in ministry, God, if you will help me now, I promise never to swear again. Bargaining hope usually involves promises that simply cannot be fulfilled. The second one is unrealistic hope. Now, when I've talked about unrealistic hope, I've often used a cartoon. And you'll see this on the insert in your order of service. Gary Larson is a very famous and well-known, and unfortunately in retirement, cartoonist. This is one of his most favorite cartoons of all the ones he ever did. And if anyone doesn't have a copy of it, there is a slide for children to slide down, and there are two little spiders on the handle, and there's a spider's web right at the bottom. And one spider is saying to the other, "If we pull this off, we'll eat like kings." And somehow that has always tickled my funny bone as a New Englander. If we pull this off, we'll eat like kings. Well, unrealistic hope is like that. We really might hope that, okay, maybe something will work out. Like, I'll drive to Pittsburgh and I'll get there in an hour without speeding or getting caught. That's unrealistic hope. I have friends weekly who purchase lottery tickets just in case they get lucky. Never mind the odds. Maybe this time they say we'll win. I've had other friends tell me that they secretly hope that there's some unknown relative they have who will die and leave them a lot of money. I have that hope once in a while, and most of my relatives are gone. Okay. I've heard people sitting at a coffee shop expressing hope that, yes, this romance will be the perfect one. Such hope is understandable, but can set us up for despair or rejection. Relationships, after all, are progress, not perfection. The third one is false hope. Back to the cartoons. I will apologize in advance to anybody who's an attorney in this congregation. A retired attorney friend on Facebook from Fort Worth sent this one to me, and I take no responsibility for the content or inference that attorneys ever provide false hope. But if anyone doesn't have it, there's a person sitting in a chair in the attorney's office, and the attorney is saying, "Don't worry, I specialize in false hope." Well, that's one way of looking at false hope. What else? How about a spam email? Remember the promises of untold riches from a prince in Nigeria who somehow got our names, and all we need to do is send our checking account information and $5 million will appear the next day? Or the regular expectations of the Christian rapture or end times being on certain dates is another. And I'm sure we've all got examples in our lives about false hope that just simply could not come to pass. Now, the fourth one is mature hope. A hope that isn't based on outcomes or belief, despite all evidence that things will work out, like false hope and so on. I think this is what Robert Fodrum was saying around hope being stronger than experience, because we don't know what our experiences in the future will be like until we have them. But our hope can give us perhaps some guidance, like that first day of sobriety for me, when instead of looking down at my feet in shame, I looked up and said to myself, "Okay, the future is in front of me." And I think that's what one way of mature hope can be. So, have anybody here ever had a miserable week and didn't want to get up and face another day? And sometimes the only thing, other than children or cats or jobs, that will get us out of bed is, "I hope today will be better. I deserve it." And it's not all bad to have hope. Hope is like the quote from the late Leonard Cohen, "There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." It's one of his famous songs and poems. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. And hope could be that light that gets in and summons us back to life and the possibilities that are ahead of us, no matter how much in despair we might be. And I think that's the kind of hope that Abel was talking about, as a state of mind. It's a hope that's positive and based a little bit in reality. It's a hope with eyes and ears and senses wide open to the possibilities in front of us. Now, admittedly, these days might feel a smidgen hopeless. There are grim scenarios: the climate crisis, racism, politics, violence in thoughts, words, and deeds, the government in Washington, D.C., I could go on and on. And might be tempted to just give up hope and say, "All right, that's it. I'm out of here. Don't bother me with any of this ever again." But that's, even though that could be easy to do, maybe as a one person isolated, like I was when I was an addict, maybe it could happen. But community is a different story. Because as I said earlier, it takes more than one person to share hope and give us a way forward into the future that isn't filled with despair. So this brings me to the fifth type of hope: borrowed hope. Sometimes another person sees causes for hope in our lives more easily than we can. After I got sober, my partner Deborah in Oregon kept telling me, "It's going to be okay, we'll work together on this," because she saw in me the possibility that I could recover. If the person is honest and trustworthy, you can borrow their confidence in you and their hope for you. So, I stand here this morning filled with hope for you. I'd like to share it with you now. My hope for you is, as a congregation, that is 195 years old. Now, why do I say this? Well, I'm an outsider still. I have some considerable experience with congregations in transition. I arrived here 5 months ago, and I experienced or sensed a certain degree of anxiety about the future. Fewer volunteers, lower attendance, building issues, governance. Oh yeah, I've seen all of this before. These are the same issues that religious communities have in America today. They have them at Stone Church. They have them across the street. Welcome to the club. But at times, that weariness can feel overwhelming. In a few minutes, we're going to have the annual meeting. And by the way, anyone who does not wish to stay for the annual meeting, I believe that coffee and tea and refreshments are going to be across the way. Is that right, Joyce? And thank you, Joyce, for getting everything ready today. So those of you who do not want to stay and vote and get excited about the future, you can go across, go in, and have first dibs on everything there. But we'll have the annual meeting, and it's probably, if I stretch my imagination, the 194th annual meeting of this congregation. That's a lot of meetings, budgets, building plans, board elections, and maybe from time to time, a little bit of arguing. Sometimes it can feel overwhelming to carry the past into today. So here's another shared hope I'm going to pass along to you. Don't worry about the past. Forget it. Not important right now. This is why. Most of us know the phrase, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. Any of you remember that? It's very famous. It's from the Tao Te Ching, a third century before the Common Era wisdom text by Lao Tzu in China. And when I hear that phrase, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, I think of it starting back there someplace in the past. But that's not an accurate translation. A more accurate translation is from Stephen Mitchell. And here is the change. The journey of 1,000 miles begins beneath your feet. The journey of 1,000 miles begins beneath your feet. And what is that is saying is the journey starts now, here, today. Yes, it started 195 years ago. Fine. We don't have to continue that journey with all that baggage. We can carry the love and the joy and everything in this building, yes. But what we need to focus on, I think, is hope. Let's say for the next 5 years. That's a nice round number, sort of. 5 years, not 195, although you can carry it if you wish. But the next 5 years of hope to carry who we are and who we want West to be, best to be, into the future. Because who else is there? It's only us. The future with this meeting today begins now. The journey begins now. Our steps begin now. And faith and service and love will carry us the rest of the way. I promise. May it be so.